So let us start by telling you about the people sitting in front of me and how they've won the Sydney Peace Prize. Take your minds back to 2013 in Florida when security guard George Zimmerman had just been acquitted on charge of murdering a young black man, Trayvon Martin. The acquittal inspired activist Alicia Garza to write on Facebook, "I continue to be surprised at how little black lives matter." Now, that Facebook post became a social media hashtag. Then, a year later, when another young black man, Michael Brown, was shot and killed in Ferguson, Missouri, the hashtag Black Lives Matter became a movement focusing on state-sanctioned brutality. It now has over 40 chapters throughout the US, a chapter in Canada, and emerging chapters in several other countries. I'm sure there's a very strong argument for having a chapter here. Now, this week, BLM was awarded the Sydney Peace Prize, and it's a tradition of our little program that every year we celebrate the Peace Prize and congratulate its winners. And two of the founders, Patrice Caloors and Rodney Deverlis, are in Australia to accept it and to meet with Indigenous people. And they join me in the Sydney studio. Patrice, Rodney, a very warm welcome to our little wireless program and hearty congratulations.
Thank you so Thank much. You. Thanks for having us.
Can we go to the beginnings of the movement, Patrice, because you coined the hashtag?
Yes, I did. Yes. Myself, Alicia Garza, and Opal Tometi started Black Lives Matter. I came across Alicia's Facebook post in 2013 after George Zimmerman was acquitted of Trayvon Martin's murder. And I was angry. I was sad. I was disturbed. And I was looking into social media like our generation does to sort of have a different conversation. And I came across Alicia Garza's Facebook post in which she said Black Lives Matter. And then I put a hashtag on Black Lives Matter.
But you couldn't have imagined what would become of that hashtag.
I couldn't have. But you know what's interesting? The day after Alicia and I decided that we were going to create a political platform out of Black Lives Matter, I wrote a Facebook post and I said, "Hey, everybody, myself and Alicia started this thing called Black Lives Matter, and we hope it gets bigger than we can ever imagine." And now we're here today receiving the Sydney Peace Prize.
Of course, the killing of Michael Brown in Ferguson was a huge impetus, a huge turbocharging.
Yes. When Mike Brown was murdered, I was in Los Angeles, and a good friend of mine said, "Hey, look at your Twitter. This young boy's been murdered, and everybody is talking about it on Twitter." And I couldn't sleep for days. I felt like something in me was like, we have to do something more. I can't just be home. They're being, you know, people on the streets of Ferguson are being rubber bulleted. They're experienced tear gas. And so myself and a good friend of mine, Darnell Moore, we actually created a Black Lives Matter ride that went into St. Louis. 600 black people from around the country, including Toronto, went to St. Louis to go meet with the community there.
And to Rodney, how did you get involved, Rodney?
It all began in 2014 for us around the same time that Darren Wilson was getting his no indictment decision by the grand jury for the killing of Mike Brown. We held a solidarity rally in Toronto. A number of organizers, activists, students, youth, we put together a solidarity rally. And from that action really came energy from community to do some more sustainable organizing.
The killing of Jermaine Carby is not as well known.
Yes, the killing of Jermaine Carby is also not as well known. It is at the exact same time that Mike Brown was getting, that the verdict was coming for the killer of Mike Brown, that Jermaine Carby got killed and got shot and killed by police. And similar, situations, unarmed black youth He is a Toronto man, and that really catapulted us to focus on the Canadian focus.
One of the ironies, of course, is that many people don't realize there is a black population in Canada.
Yeah, indeed.
Let alone that there are problems with the cops.
Indeed, absolutely. I think that the reality is that black folks have existed in Canada since colonization. We were enslaved as well. Folks came in the early 1900s in waves in the 1960s and the 1990s as well.
Patrice, BLM is oft described as not your grandfather's civil rights movement. In what ways does it distinguish itself from the 60s?
Well, I think it's important. You know, Tef Poe is the one that coined that. He said that, and Tef Poe's from St. Louis. And he was actually saying that in response to many of the old civil rights guard, people like Al Sharpton and Jesse Jackson. And he was challenging their idea that we had to be respectable. We had to be, quote, respectable Negroes to get our point across. And he was challenging this notion that the only way civil rights or human rights were going to actually be seen was if black people wore suits or we wore dresses, we were Christian. And he was like, actually, this generation of black people, we're the lost generation. We're the generation that has been over-incarcerated, over-policed. We're the generation that have seen our families be torn apart by policing and state violence. We're the generation that has been pummeled by the war on drugs. And so we're going to come all with our whole selves. And that's why he really said that phrase, this isn't your granddaddy's civil rights movement.
Of course, the civil rights movements historically were led by, quote, great men.
Mm-hmm. Yes, and we actually like to counter that. We know now that many women were the architects of the civil rights movement. If we think of women like Fannie Lou Hamer, if we think of women like Ella Baker, Ella Baker actually challenged the idea of the charismatic leader. It was Ella Baker that said, it's not Martin Luther King that makes the movement, it's the movement that makes Martin Luther King. And we see ourselves as a movement that's led by femme people, queer people, women, trans people. It's led by black people at the margins.
I suddenly remember sitting in Al Sharpton's office in Madison Avenue, up the wrong end of Madison Avenue, and he was awaiting a decision on a black murder by the NYPD, and it came through, and I remember the place erupted. Was Sharpton a moderate? I don't remember him. I don't remember him being overly polite.
I think it was less about him being overly polite and more that there was this growing movement happening across the country, and the old civil rights guard was pretty tone deaf to it. And instead of reaching out to many of us, and listen, it's been 4 years, so we have much better relationships with these folks. But at the beginning, it was quite challenging. I think people felt like they thought that we weren't behaving appropriately. I think, you know, people made comments that, you know, we didn't know what we were doing. And so we really wanted to challenge the old civil rights guard around how they understood us.
I suppose there are parallels here with younger women challenging the leading figures in feminism. You know, you need a generational change.
Exactly. And that's what we've seen. I think, I hope that, you know, there's a younger generation and 10, 20 years from now that is challenging me. I don't think that what we're doing now is going to work 20 years from now.
Rodney, the goal for the 60s civil rights movement was to gain representation and jobs, a better place in society, a measure of equality. What are the goals of BLM?
I think the goals of BLM are about seeking for liberation. I think it's about holding the state, holding institutions like the police accountable for the ways that they inflict violence on us. I think it's about creating a world where black folks globally can live, can thrive, and can be represented in the way that we want to be.
Some BLM members say they want to run as mayor, etc. But by and large, the organization doesn't see itself as allied with a political party, not even the Democrats.
Yeah, so I think that all across the board, we exist and we transcend political parties. We recognize that political parties are not finite. And we recognize that our work actually exists to bring people together wherever they may be. And we recognize that we The only ways that we can actually free and liberate our communities are through a direct community intervention. It's through working as community.
Patrice, would you rule out a specifically political role for yourself in the future?
No, I wouldn't.
Would you run for office?
I'd be open to considering it. I think what we are seeing in this current moment, Black people inside the States in particular, we're looking at all the different angles that we can fight for power. And so recently, Black Lives Matter has joined with the Movement for Black Lives, which is a coalition-built organization of Black-led orgs, where we are looking at building out an electoral project and looking at the ways that we can not just fight for Black people to be in office, but also fight for legislation that actually offers a Black Lives Matter perspective.
Patrice, BLM was born when the U.S. had its first Black president. Was that significant?
Definitely. We were up against a post-racial society. Everybody believed, not everybody, white people believed that because we had a Black president, that racism was over and we didn't have to have this discussion any longer. And yet we saw Black people being killed by vigilantes and law enforcement. And so the push and challenge, I think, of our Black president at the time was that he really show up for Black people in ways that many of the presidents of the past had not.
You weren't disappointed in Obama's performance?
Yes, we were disappointed in Obama's performance. I think we challenged him every step of the way. I think a good democracy challenges its elected officials. And I think he could have done more and he should have done more. And, I also have a lot of respect for the position that he was in.
I wonder whether Trudeau is changing the landscape for BLM in Canada.
I think that Trudeau does a very great work of standing in opposition to 45 Trump. He's well liked. He's coiffed. He does hit the key points in what a politician should do besides actually taking action. Social movements in Canada are highly critical of the ways that that Trudeau has not only ignored his commitments to Indigenous sovereignty. He's actually under his watch. There has been no significant improvement to the lives of Black and Indigenous people in Canada.
What is the percentage of Black people in Canadian prisons?
Yeah, so we are
overrepresented.
We are overrepresented. So we are 3% of the Canadian population, but over 10% of federal prisons. Indigenous folks are 4% of the population and over 24% of the Canadian prison. So we prison population. So, collectively, Black and Indigenous people regularly rank number one and two when you're looking at statistics for federal prisons, for incarceration, for employment, and a variety of different other factors. It's a national tragedy.
As it is in the United States, Patrice.
Yes, there are 2.3 million people in prison, 1 million are Black. We are the generation who have been completely decimated by incarceration and policing. Michelle Alexander wrote a book exactly on this to talk about mass incarceration and the war on drugs and the deep and profound impact it has had on so many of us.
And of course, there are endless attempts to try and prevent Blacks registering to vote still.
Exactly. I mean, part of the unfortunate reality of oftentimes being a convicted felon is you lose your right to vote. And many people are actually trying to work on changing that. There's actually a woman in California, her name's Taina Vargas, who's actually putting up a ballot initiative to try to reverse the ways in which convicted people have been disenfranchised around voting.
Well, the White House has never been so blindingly white as it is now. Is blowback to the Trump administration helping?
Yes, I do. I believe so. We were pretty demoralized. Many of us in our movement when 45 was brought into office when he was elected. And I think what we've seen, though, is a significant resistance movement to him. And we've seen the efforts of the resistance movement actually make a difference. And I think Black Lives Matter has been at the forefront of that resistance movement.
What's happened in Ferguson? Let's go back to Ferguson. Mm-hmm. Has it changed?
You know, it's hard because change doesn't happen in 4 years. It takes a long
time. Well, sometimes it happens overnight. Sometimes you see a Ceausescu regime disappears, the wall comes down.
Yeah. And I think So that type of change, of course, right? The entire community was transformed in Ferguson. But for me, I guess the question is, what's the longstanding change? Will Ferguson end up being the same cesspool it was in 10 years from now? It really depends on who's in local office. It really depends on what kind of movement exists. Because even if we get all the right people in office, if we don't have a movement that's holding them accountable, we could end up having the same situation down the road.
Rodney, has the kneeling, that marvelous sort of gesture during the playing of the U.S. national anthem, has that got into Canada?
It hasn't really trickled up. I think Canada doesn't really have the same kind of sports culture that that the United States has. I think that generally, though, Canadians, we watch very closely what's happening down in the States. We do share a border in many economic systems, and I think folks have been inspired by that movement. I think folks globally have been inspired by that action and the ways that everybody really has to come out in support of Black lives.
Patrice, the movement, hugely visible. What do you count as its successes thus far?
I think Black people have been relentless in this movement. We have made a decision that this is our life's work. You've seen folks either leave their jobs for this movement, lose their jobs for this movement, and have been incredibly active and persistent during this moment.
And of course, you have the great power of social media. Without it, it couldn't have happened.
I agree. I think social media has been one of our greatest tools. If we go back to Hurricane Katrina, we didn't have social media in the same ways that we do now. And so the story that was being told...
Well, that was a great case where Black lives didn't matter.
Exactly. And the story wasn't being told. The story was being told by mainstream media. And the story on mainstream media was that Black people were looting and white people were finding food. And so social media has allowed for Black people to tell our own stories. It's allowed for us to say, look it, the police are shooting someone in our neighborhood. Look it, the police are brutalizing someone in our neighborhood. We're not just making this up. This is not hyperbolic. Social media has become this a voice box for so many of us.
Are police forces in the U.S., from the NYPD to Ferguson, are they trying to adjust? Is there a hint of goodwill, or are the barriers as higher than ever?
The barriers are higher than ever because we have a president in the U.S. that is completely aligned with police brutality. We have a president in the U.S. that encourages the police to be brutal. And I think we also have a system of policing that has historically and presently been violent and brutal. And it is very hard to change that system.
Your movement is an inclusive movement, Rodney. Mm-hmm. You invite a lot of people in and you take on a lot of other issues.
Yeah, I think that we recognize that our movement is intersectional. And as Patrice was mentioning that, you know, this sort of new generation and new wave of activism recognizes the different ways that our Blackness comes on. So Black folks are queer, they're women, they're migrants, they're trans, they're disabled, they're poor, they're Indigenous. All of those must be included at the table.
Are you including Indigenous people in Canada?
Yeah, absolutely. We are actually building deep movement relationship with Indigenous folks. We recognize that Black Lives Matter on Indigenous land, and we recognize that both Indigenous organizers and Black organizers must work in tandem to eradicate, you know, anti-Blackness, anti-Indigeneity, and generally the colonial violence that exists.
If you have, in fact, successfully challenged the great men, the great Black leaders of the past, are they resentful of this?
I don't know if they're resentful. I think in a lot of ways, in some cities, some of the old guard is definitely not supportive. But in other places, you know, I think in the last 4 years, we've received a lot of support from Al Sharpton in particular, and Jesse Jackson in particular. That has taken, you know, our own internal sit-down conversations. It's taken a lot of work. But in general, elders of the civil rights movement are grateful for Black Lives Matter.
Rodney, look into the future, 5, 10 years. What do you think BLM will be up to?
I think that BLM will continue to be a political home for Black folks. I think that that is actually one of the greatest things that we do now, is that we provide a space for Black folks to come and to organize, to mobilize, to do political work both inside, outside, and around systems. And I think that in 10 years, BLM hopefully would be a global movement that recognizes that we need to do global work around ending anti-Black racism.
Australia, as you know, has an appalling history of treating Indigenous people, and they're overrepresented in prisons. The Black deaths in custody has been an ongoing horror story in this country. Black lives are brief in Australia. The Black life expectancy is far, far less than white fellas. So we need Black Lives Matter here. You're going to talk, are you not, to Indigenous groups while you're both here?
Yeah, we have been. We have been, actually. Throughout the time, we first landed in Mildura, then we were here in Sydney, and we're going to Melbourne. And part of that is having conversations and sharing skills. It's about us, you know, really giving whatever we have or whatever we know to be building with folks.
Yes, I think part of our visit isn't just to get a prize. When we decided to accept the prize, we were really clear that we wanted to bring a delegation here. So it's myself, Rodney, and we also have someone else from BLM Long Beach, a local Southern California chapter. And we see this as part of a long-lasting relationship around building the global Black family.
Having watched the Aboriginal activists over the decades in Australia, again and again, you see them reaching out to the US for the example, for the leadership. But we've also got some pretty sophisticated Black leaders here. Indeed. So the interaction, I think, would be very valuable for all parties.
Absolutely.
Yeah, we agree.
Well, it is a tradition of this little program that we always honour the Sydney Peace Prize. Its recipients are a who's who of remarkable human beings and indeed remarkable organisations. But this program has a little tiny award of its own. It's not a physical award, it's just a sort of a joke award, but we take it very seriously. And it's called the Koala Stamp. So as well as the Sydney Peace Prize, on behalf of all the listeners for Late Night Live, I award you both with a koala stamp, and thank you to the Sydney Peace Prize for recognising your extraordinary efforts.
Woo-hoo, thank you, koala stamp.
Good on you, Patrice Cullors, co-founder of Black Lives Matters Global Network, and thank you, Rodney Develis, lead organiser, BLM Canada.